Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday morning here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, something we're going to do again today because I have with me Ben Barak. We also try to expose and condemn the myths associated with patriotism in the media, even with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change your mind towards some of your human allegiances. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission this morning will be to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines so you aren't played for a fool, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number for those who would like to question, to criticize, or to affirm anything I or our guest has to say this morning is 877-300-7645. Before I introduce Ben, I want to make a comment. If you want to minimize school violence, the answer is obvious. Expose and condemn socialist secular humanism and its moral code political correctness. If you remove political correctness from our schools, from the media, and from politics, the instances of violence like we have seen in our schools will return to the levels that we witnessed before they were so poisoned by this disease. Virtually non-existent. We've always had guns. We've not always had school violence of this kind. The thing that has changed is that our politics, our schools, and our media are now consumed with political correctness. In political correctness, there is one crime, and that is being judgmental. And yet the moment you cease being judgmental, exercising good judgment, you cease to be moral. You cease to be just. You cease to be caring. You cease to be rational. It is always irrational, it is always immoral to go into a school and to kill innocent children. What causes these people to be irrational, immoral? It's that we no longer value good judgment. Second to that, we must deal with the broad use of antidepressant medication. The overwhelming preponderance, and it is to the point that it's almost exclusive, of those who have perpetrated mass murder in our society over the last 50 years have been those who have been diagnosed with clinical depression or clinical psychiatric disorders and who are taking either antidepressant medication or have recently gone off taking antidepressant medication or dealing with the withdrawals, or they're dealing with other mind-altering drugs. We have to come to realize that when we play around with people's minds, that it puts them at risk, not only at risk to themselves, but at risk to others. And this idea that we can't disclose who is risky to be around is being unconcerned about those who are not taking those drugs. Just as we are concerned with those who drive an automobile drunk, we ought to be concerned with those who are taking antidepressant drugs, and we ought to be concerned not only for their safety, but for ours and our children's. Now, those things said, my guest today is Ben Barak, one of my favorite guests on the show. He's been with us many times. He is the author of a very interesting book. It's called Unsung Davids, 10 Men Who Battled Goliath Without Glory. You can reach Ben, communicate directly with him at benbarak.com or baraknow.blogspot.com or Google Ben Varrack, and it's B-A-R-R-A-C-K, and you will find him that way. This morning, before having been on the program, I did what I usually do when we are blessed to have Ben's insights. I went to his blog. It is always interesting. It's always pertinent. It was this morning. And so, Ben, I would like to for you to begin, if you wouldn't mind, this morning by sharing with us the statement that Governor Rick Perry made following that pathetic appearance by the President of the United States yesterday to undermine the U.S. Constitution by banning certain classes of guns.
Yeah, thanks, Yada. By the way, I couldn't agree more with your opening statement there. But as far as the statement and as far as that display yesterday, I literally could not stomach it. I could not watch much more than about 2 minutes of it. It was really affecting me physically. I can honestly say that.
We were in the exact same boat there. I mean, it made me nauseous.
Yeah, it did.
Yesterday.
And that's often a figure of speech, but I mean it literally.
Yeah.
Now, what Obama did yesterday was exploit children. He used children to further the gun control agenda that is now politically fertile ground after the Sandy Hook shooting because of this administration.
Yeah, he actually presented himself as the Great Father. It's the same thing that Stalin did. It's the same thing that the Roman Catholic Church likes to do. It's the same thing that the dictator in North Korea does. It is a political tool that is very popular with the weak-minded. He presented himself as the Great Father. He likes, of course, to present himself as a Messiah figure. But yesterday he was presenting himself in the role of the Great Father.
Yeah, and it was really disgusting beyond words. But Rick Perry, our governor in Texas, issued a statement about, and I'll just read the last paragraph of it because that's probably where the meat of it is. But he is expressing his disgust with what Obama did. He says, "The piling on by the political left and the cohorts and the media to use the massacre of little children to advance a pre-existing political agenda that would not have saved those children disgusts me personally. The Second Amendment to the Constitution is a basic right of free people and cannot be, nor will it be, abridged by the executive power of this or any other president." Now, my initial reaction to that was, that's good. I think he's correct, but it once again is reactionary in nature. The would-be political opponents to Barack Obama do not go on offense. They do not do it, even when it is obviously necessary and would be obviously effective. And Rick Perry fell into this. Unless he pursues it further, will fall into this trap again. This president loves seeing his opponents react in a defensive nature, even if it's highly critical of him, because he still maintains control. When he doesn't have control is when his political opponents go on offense and are aggressive.
Yeah, a great example is where he said, "I will not negotiate with this Congress," speaking down to him, stubbing his nose at them, the Great Father figure again. "I will not negotiate with this Congress on paying its debts." It's irresponsible that this Congress would not want to pay its bills and would hold a gun to the head of the American people. It's what he's seeking there is a reaction. And when people react to him, then he is the center of all things. He is the center of his world.
That's right. And that's where his narcissism comes in.
Yeah. No, there's one statement that you made before you share your letter, because your letter makes one of the 2 points that I wanted to make as I was listening to the beginning of his press conference in front of all the little children. is that because I did not listen to the whole thing. I was incapable of doing it. I was too nauseous.
Yeah.
Did the president ever mention the U.S. Constitution and the fact that what he was seeking to do was in direct conflict with the U.S. Constitution?
No.
Did he ever say that what we need to do here, since the U.S. Constitution gives the American people the right to bear and keep arms, and that it is actually stated in the context of that those arms be the kind of arms that a militia would use, which means they are not to be restricted to those things that would be used for sport. They are the kind of weapons, like assault weapons, for example, happen to be the poster child for exactly what the U.S. Constitution was saying, that the American people have the right to keep and bear, and that right could not be infringed in any way. Did he say we're going to have an amendment to the Constitution because the Constitution is no longer valid? Or did he just completely ignore the fact that what he was asking for was unconstitutional?
That would be the latter. Completely now, ignored what he was doing.
Is not the center of the U.S. government, talking about narcissism here, is not the center of the U.S. government is Constitution?
Yes.
So for him to say that his great role as father in protecting all the little children, that bears more validity than the very document that is the foundation of this country?
He would have you believe that. Absolutely. He's brought the Constitution.
But why is it that more people aren't grotesquely alarmed by that? That the only thing that distinguishes America from any other country is that it is a republic. Republic is based on the rule of law, and the law in the United States, its foundation, is the Constitution. Why is a direct assault on the Second Amendment of the Constitution not considered a problem?
I think it's two primary reasons. I think one is this media is doing the president's bidding, and it has dumbed down the American people. And the second reason is those who are in positions of power to oppose him are choosing not to do it, despite this incredibly powerful and absent vacuum for leadership. It's not being filled. And I think those two things combined, are probably as responsible as anything.
Yeah, I think you're right on the last point. It's the reason why I am not only unpolitical, I'm anti-political, because I don't think there is a good side. I don't think you can choose anything but the possibly on occasion the lesser of two evils, and I don't want to align myself with evil. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment. Shattering Myths. For those who would like to engage in this discussion, our number is 877-300-7645. We're speaking about the disgusting display of narcissism that was on display yesterday. The President of the United States, acting as the Great Father, decided that he was above the U.S. Constitution and that he was the moral compass for our nation, and decided that his existing agenda on taking guns away from people, so that only those that he has direct control over are armed, should be foisted on the American people at the expense of children, when the issues have nothing to do with guns and everything to do with the political doctrine that this man espouses, socialist secular humanism, and with it political correctness. And the drug age in America, how we have chosen to drug ourselves into oblivion, and we have numbed what is left of our ability to think. But we do have a man who knows how to think here, and he made a statement at the end of the last segment before we consider his response to this president's disgusting presentation yesterday. He said, you know, one of the problems is that we have no leadership on the other side of the aisle that knows how to effectively engage the American people. How is it, Ben, in today's world, that a person can be political and support either side? Now, before I ask you that question, be aware that one of the things that God asked us is the first requirement of the covenant is that we walk away from religion and we walk away from politics. So this is not something that we ought to be doing, but it sure strikes me as there is no way to morally engage in politics and stay clean.
Well, I think that if you are yourself morally principled and guided and confident in your beliefs, and that you don't compromise yourself and your positions and your views and what you believe, and push your elected leaders to do what you know is right, whether they do it or not, I think there's some validity in that.
I view it as one of the things that God does throughout His Torah, prophets, and Psalms is He not only communicates this is good guidance. This instruction is productive for you. If you follow this guidance, you're going to live a long and happy life.
Yeah.
The following things, if you do them, they're going to be bad for you. And if you do these things, you're going to end up living a very short and miserable life. And so if what you're suggesting is that you use your words to explain to elected officials, whether they choose to listen or not, but you make
right.
your voice known, particularly to those who elect them, that these kinds of behaviors, like the behavior of decadence that has gotten us into, and greed, covetousness that's got us into this financial mess, where Americans are now voting to take money from one group of people to give it to themselves, that kind of moral depravity is inappropriate. So you can do what you do, which is tell the truth and hope that there are some people who will benefit from it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I believe, at least for me, I find it personally rewarding to have an honest, to honestly pursue what I believe to be the truth and not have an agenda. Just the truth is the agenda. Now, does that mean that we're always right? No, but I do think that if you know what's right and you are pushing elected leaders, whether they listen or not, if you push elected leaders, and like you say, those who follow them by informing them, then every once in a while, you know, like they say, a blind acorn might find the blind pig might
yeah.
find an acorn every once in a while. If that happens, it's like a teacher who's frustrated with none of the students learning or wanting to learn, but they reach one kid.
Let me speak to that a bit. What I have found is that people who are very religious or very political, that you can put the truth in front of them. You can have an unassailable source for the evidence. You can use logic that is unassailable as well. And with the person whose perspective is either guided by their religion or their politics, that evidence and reason mean nothing. They literally roll off their back like water off a duck.
Yeah.
But the thing that I would like to discuss before we get to your response, which I thought was brilliant, to the president's pathetic statement yesterday, is that if you are genuinely interested in the truth, what it will reveal to you will cause you to change most everything that you have held true. And that's a very scary position for most people. Let's speak about that as well when we return to Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We're here with Ben Berek. Ben and I are in the midst of discussing the president's pathetic appeal to Americans to violate the Constitution of the United States and to ban guns. We now have almost 60% of Americans in favor of violating the U.S. Constitution and banning the public ownership of guns, as if guns were the problem as opposed to the underlying mental issues that are causing us to be incapable of exercising good judgment. And we were talking about, in the last segment, about pursuing truth no matter where it leads. Now, Ben, I want to share with you why I not only agreed with you, but why what you said is so scary, at least initially. Let me give you four examples. I devoted, as you know, 10,000 hours to the study of Islam. I have personally met with Al-Qaeda, and I asked them why they were killing us. They quoted from the Quran and Hadith. So I chose to become an expert on the Quran and Hadith so I would know whether or not the Islamic terrorists had corrupted their religion or whether their religion had corrupted them. What I learned is that Islam had corrupted them and that it's impossible to be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist. Now, the reason that that was a problem because of where the truth led is because the U.S. Constitution prohibits infringing on the practice of one's religion. And so long as the First Amendment of the Constitution guarantees the free practice of religion, there is no way that America can defend itself against Islamic terrorism. That's a problem. The truth led to a very uncomfortable place because I considered myself a constitutionalist. Let me give you another one. I was a patriot who would rally in support of our troops. But when I studied the history of the Vietnam War, I realized that we invaded Vietnam based upon a lie. The Gulf of Tonkin incident did not occur. We began World War I on a lie. The sinking of the Lusitania was planned, was scripted. And yet, thousands of Americans died. I learned that LBJ knew that the war in Vietnam was unwinnable before we had lost as many as 5,000 men, but for personal political reasons, he chosen to continue to engage in the war. And we lost 55,000 Americans. I lost my appetite for supporting the military and being patriotic because that's where the truth led. I was a conservative financially, and so I was a huge proponent of Republicans over Democrats because I recognized that we need to lower taxation and we grossly need to lower spending in this country. And yet when I studied the history of these things, what I found is that until Ronald Reagan, you could make the claim that Democrats were the party of high taxes and high spending and the Republicans were the opposite. But after Reagan, after both Bushes, you can no longer make that claim. Oh. Reagan and Bush were worse than any of their Democrats that preceded them. And so I've lost the truth led me to the point where I could no longer support Republicans because they were hypocrites. I was an evangelical Christian. I cited Pauline doctrine like it was going out of style. And then a friend of mine in New Zealand wrote me a letter and said, how can Paul's statements regarding the Torah be true and God's statements regarding his Torah be true because they say exactly the opposite thing? And so I pursued the truth. And when I did it, I found that Paul was a liar. And that means that the founder of the Christian religion cannot be trusted. Each of the times that you pursue the truth, if you're willing to embrace where it leads you, it will lead you to a place that is extraordinarily unpopular. And so while what you said is the single most important thing I believe that we can do is to use evidence and reason to come to understand our world as it really is, it is a very isolating thing to do. It will lead you to places that are extraordinarily unpopular. I have found, Ben, that there's only one source that no matter how deeply you dig, no matter how closely you look, no matter how carefully you consider it, looks better with each passing moment. And that's the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, the books that Yahweh himself authored. And I have found nothing else that is trustworthy.
Well, you know, a lot of that, Yada, you are, I would defer to what you have studied, and because I'm not prepared to refute it. There is one thing I would say with respect to what you mentioned about the Constitution and freedom of religion.
Mm-hmm.
The Islam as you know, is, in addition to a religion, is also a political system. Sharia law is the law of the land. But this gave me encouragement when you talk about the Constitution. Article 6 specifically states that the Constitution itself shall be the supreme law of the land. So if we can see Islam for what it is a political system, then the First Amendment does not apply to it.
You got to be careful there, though. And that is because for almost all of its 1,500 years, the religion of Christianity has been an equal part political system. Throughout every area that Christianity influenced, there was no distinction between cleric and king. If you look at the at Nazism, which we went to war against, it was equal parts religion and politics. Islam is no different than Christianity. If you look at Judaism through most of its history, there's no separation between Judaism and the governance of that nation. And so religion and politics are essentially one thing. They are belief systems, and they are moral systems. And by moral, I do not mean, you know, there's bankrupt morality and there is Yahweh's morality. They are bankrupt moral systems, but they are moral systems. They are legal systems. The substantial part of the United States legal system was initially based upon Judeo-Christian ideals. So you have to be really careful. The founders of the United States were Freemasons and a Jacobin. And so that is the whole concept of Freemasonry and Jacobinism is this integration of religion and politics. So your point is valid. I've had many people, in fact, my guest tomorrow is IQ Al-Rasuli, who hates it when I refer to Islam as a religion because he calls it a cult and a political scheme.
Right.
But we have to be careful. It is equal parts religion and politics, as are those others. But your point is well taken. Let's return if we can now to your response. One of the things that troubled me the most, not the most, one of the things that troubled me about the president's response is that he himself was a gun runner.
Yeah.
And that it is. The thing that disgusts me about politicians is that they are hypocrites. And so your response to him and your letter to Governor Perry went right to the heart of President Obama's hypocrisy.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I wanted to do because, again, Perry's reaction was just that. It was reactionary. That's not going to get us anywhere. But what is going to get us anywhere is offense. And the thing about Sandy Hook is we are barely a month after that. And this administration, as you know, has gone to extreme lengths to exploit it to a great extent. And it almost came to a crescendo yesterday with Obama in front of those kids. So
yes.
The urgency with which this administration is acting with respect to Sandy Hook was completely absent and remains completely absent when it came to Fast and Furious.
Yeah, can I interrupt you just 1 second there?
Sure.
I don't want to give the impression that the president waited a month after the Sandy Hook tragedy to respond to promote his agenda, because that's not the case. The president, within an hour of Sandy Hook, said that something needed to be done regarding guns.
Right.
So his initial response was to use, within an hour of the time that it occurred, in his first statement, he already tied the Sandy Hook killings to his agenda, which is to control guns. And we must make this point. Sandy Hook did not happen because of guns. It happened because of political correctness in our schools and our media and our politics, when no one seems to be able to exercise good judgment in this country anymore. It happened because of the inappropriate and excessive use of mind-numbing and controlling drugs, which are overprescribed in our country, and it was not a factor of assault rifles. Assault rifles are responsible for 1.5% of the murders, of the gun murders each year. 1.5%. It's an irrelevant part of this puzzle. So the fact they're going after assault rifles with high magazine counts is irrelevant. It's not responsible for 98% of the gun deaths in this country.
Yeah, and as far as the assault weapons go, as far as going after them, not only did they not go after them in Fast and Furious, they sent them assault weapons, thousands of them, to Mexican drug cartels. The opposite of urgency, which is what we're seeing with the gun control agenda with Sandy Hook, is essentially stonewalling. That's exactly what the administration did with Fast and Furious, and I found it ironic that the Sandy Hook shooting happened 2 years to the day of the murder of Border Patrol agent Brian Terry, where these Fast and Furious weapons were found at the scene. But Joe Biden, this was the you talked about yesterday, Yada, about Obama's deal. What Joe Biden did last week on January 9th, with in front of the press, is just as equally egregious. He used very graphic language to describe that the Sandy Hook victims were riddled with bullets, while Eric Holder was sitting directly next to him. Eric Holder is still the head of the DOJ and the ATF that ran guns, walked guns, and not only that, but told gun store owners to sell them illegally to straw purchasers who they then allowed to walk into Mexico, give to drug cartels that the ATF and the people involved in this scandal knew full well would be used to riddle people with bullets, to include children. In fact, we don't even know how many people have been killed by cartels and those using those weapons. The number is still climbing, but it's at least 400. And Sandy Hook, as bad as it was and as horrific as it was, the death toll as a result of this administration's actions with assault weapons
are hundreds to one. We're at the end of a break. Stay with us over the commercial break, and we'll return with Ben Barek. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering This. We have as our guest today Ben Barek. Ben is the author of Unsung Davids, which you can buy at Amazon.com. It is about 10 individuals who fought Goliath without glory. He can also be reached by, and I would Google him, Ben, B-A-R-I-A-K. If you, B-A-R-R-A-K-A-C-K, I should say, I can actually spell it. He can spell it. My producer, I looked up at the screen and saw your name written on my screen, and Scott writes it out phonetically so that I don't return to the Hebrew. You actually have the combination of two Hebrew names, a Hebrew first name. Ben means son, and Barak means to kneel down in love, to bless, and so he writes it phonetically for me so that I pronounce it not in the as it would be in Hebrew. I want to share three thoughts with you, Ben, and get your reaction. And by the way, you've been as always spectacular guest today. As I do every time that we have you on the program, I turn to your blog. As it turned out, your blog led us into things that I think have made for really enlightening discussion this morning. I want to share three things with you, because what you have done is to tie the hypocrisy of this man, the fact that he supplied guns. He was a gun runner in Mexico, and it led to the deaths of hundreds of people, and yet he speaks of the tragedy of a person with a gun killing 26 people, when in fact his guns that he provided killed many hundreds of people. Let me give you three more examples. This president specifically sent American assault weapons through Qatar into Libya. It was those weapons that killed the American ambassador. And rather than taking responsibility for the weapons that he had provided, killing Americans, and acknowledging the realization that the weapons that we had provided had gone to fundamentalist Islamic groups, in this case, Ansar Sharia, that perpetrated and planned the act, he blamed a movie that was produced by a Christian. This administration and the previous one was responsible for giving assault rifles to Sunnis in Iraq. It was those assault rifles and those weapons that were given to the Sunnis in Iraq that were then brought into Syria that turned what was a peaceful revolution in Syria into a bloody civil war where 100,000 people have now died.
Mm-hmm.
This president has used drones to kill thousands of men, women, and children around the world, many of them American citizens, all without due process, without any consideration to the Constitution. The President of the United States has personally decided to murder many thousands of individuals who have been killed on his direct order, all without due process. This is not war. This is, here's the name of an individual. I don't like him. I want him killed. And they are killed. Mass murder. And yet this man stands up in front of children as the righteous leader, as a man without blood on his hands?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the common thread over there in the Middle East is you know, Sunni. You know, when you look at, and the irony is for the Benghazi situation, that consulate was essentially a gun-free zone. So, you know, Fast and Furious is about putting assault weapons and guns into the hands of bad guys who would kill innocent people, when Benghazi turns out to be a situation where they took guns away from the good people or the people that represent the United States and put the guns in the hands of the bad guys, the Sunnis, that would then besiege the consulate.
100% of the guns that we provided to Libya, and there were tens of thousands of them, were given to Islamic terrorists. They were 100% of them were given to jihadists, to mujahideen, to fundamentalist Muslims, the very Muslims we went in to fight in Afghanistan and Iraq. Those were the Muslims we armed in Syria and Libya. It's the Muslims we're arming in Syria.
Yep.
It's the Muslims we armed in Iraq. What's wrong with us?
We've got some. It would seem to point to some Muslim Brotherhood influence in the halls of power in the United States, and there are plenty of examples of that. They're pretty long, actually, pretty lengthy examples.
Yeah, I think it's far more than just the influence of Islam in the White House. I think it is far worse than that. I think that we, as a nation, have lost our way. And helping to find it has been Ben Barak this morning. We'll have Ben back on a future program. Ben, thank you again for your contribution. I thought your insights on what happened yesterday were absolutely brilliant. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. And there's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy.